24 hours ago, Betsy and I were about 30 miles east of Chattanooga in a beautiful wedding venue, and about this time I was looking at Grant saying, "You can kiss your bride." It was a blessing to be there, an emotional experience for me. I was back in the side room and just wiping away the tears even before the ceremony. I said, "You better get your act together." And when Adam brought Emma in, walked her down the aisle, I look over there, Grant, and the rivers are flowing. And that didn't help the case either. But anyway, they're honeymooning in Florida, I think. If they don't get washed away or blown away. But they'll be down there for about a week. We'll look forward to them being back here and celebrating together with them. Thank you. If you remembered, and whoever was praying for us last night, I appreciate it. We left there at 7 o'clock and pulled in our house at 1 o'clock, and I didn't get sleepy last night. It was pretty unusual. And I got home and unpacked, and 15 minutes later, I was sleepy. So, thank you for praying for us. I have a couple of goals tonight in this lesson to encourage us to listen to each other. And I suppose the bulk of the lesson will be encouraging those of us who are younger to listen to those who are older, but it's not all about that. And there may not be a lot of specifics in this lesson, although I'm going to touch on a couple areas in just a little while. But I do want to think about the attitudes that we need to have for one another in developing and building relationships so that we can offer counsel and advice, especially when it's asked for. I'm going to begin by looking at a story of Rehoboam in the Old Testament, and you remember this. Solomon had failed miserably at the end of his life, sadly enough. And God declared that the kingdom was going to be divided. And he had told the servant of Solomon, Jeroboam, that he would be given kingship over the upper 10 tribes, and that Judah would remain under the family of David. Well, after Solomon died and the people came to Rehoboam to make him king, Jeroboam with his people came to him and had a complaint. And that complaint was how his father, Solomon, had treated them, particularly in regards to the work that he required of them. And the request was that he would make things easier than Solomon had made them. "Your father made our yoke heavy," Jeroboam said. "Now therefore lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put on us, and we will serve you." Well, Rehoboam said, "Give me 3 days to think about it." And so in the meantime, he asked the advice of the servants of the men, and I would guess that the kind of the cabinet members of Solomon's reign. And he asked them, "What do you guys think I should do?" And they spoke to him in verse 7, "If you will be a servant to these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, they will be your servants forever." But he rejected the counsel of the elders that they gave him, and he consulted the young men who had grown up with him, who stood before him. So instead of listening to the wisdom of the older, he listened to the wisdom or the advice of his peers. And in this case, they suggested to him, "Make it harder." And he did that. And when Jeroboam had heard that that was the advice that he was going to follow, then it led to a division in the kingdom. And yes, all of that a part of God's plan, but nevertheless, I want you to think about that Rehoboam listened to the advice of his peers, leading to the division of the kingdom. Whose philosophies are we listening to? In Colossians that John just read for us, all wisdom and knowledge has been put into Jesus and his message and his gospel. And all that we need to be the people God wants us to be is found in his Son. But he says in verse 8, to beware of philosophies. Philosophy is simply a love of wisdom. That's the Greek word transliterated, philosophy, a love of wisdom. And we get to decide whose wisdom we love and we want to listen to and that we value. Every book we read, every podcast we listen to, every song we listen to, every television show we watch, every movie we watch, whoever wrote the songs and wrote the books, and even if they're just entertainment, they have a philosophy, and a philosophy of life, and we're listening to that. And if we're not discerning, sometimes we're taking in information that may not be helpful to us being the kind of people that we ought to be. Everybody in our day is a philosopher. We live in an Athens kind of world. I mean Athens in Acts 17. And we live in that kind of world because the philosophies of all are at our fingertips, or all you got to do is say, Siri, ask her. And so we're just inundated with all of this information, and some of it very helpful. Whose proverbs are we listening to? This could be a study, and I'm thinking about one part of this lesson tonight, and J.D. spent a good bit of time going through some proverbs talking about parenting. And we'll mention that a little bit later. And that's what the proverbs is words of a king of Solomon to his son. And he says in verse 7, a familiar passage, I think, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be graceful ornaments on your head and chains about your neck. You know, if you're going to wear some jewelry, make sure you've got this imaginary jewelry around your neck as well. And that is the instructions of your parents, especially when our parents were godly. There's a picture of wisdom in James chapter 3. It's a marvelous picture. And God wants us to consider, what does a wise man look like? How does he think? How does he act? Who is wise and understanding among you, he says? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in meekness of wisdom. But you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts. Don't boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom doesn't descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exists, confusion and every evil thing will be there. But the wisdom that's from above is first pure, and then peaceable, and gentle, willing to yield. I'm going through this lesson with you tonight, and I'm thinking about the younger listening to the older, but I think us as the older need to be careful that we become unyielding, unwilling to hear, to listen, even to our younger brothers and sisters, and be so unyielding that any suggestion of any change at all is met with absolute resistance. They may see something we haven't seen. They may have thought about something that we haven't thought about. So all of wisdom isn't just in those of that are older. And so there's an attitude here that I find is helpful. And as we work together in being the people and doing the work God has expected us to do, he goes on and says, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So are we listening? Are we developing the character that will enable us to be a people who can give advice, take advice, give counsel, listen to counsel, to be helpful to each other? Are we listening to the wisdom of Solomon in Ecclesiastes? I enjoyed that so much the first few months we were here that got to study the book of Ecclesiastes together. And it's interesting to me that over time I find, and sometimes it's older members come to me and say, it's just a depressing book. I heard somebody say that recently about, they heard someone was studying Ecclesiastes and said, well, that's just a depressing book. I don't think it is. I think it's depressing to the people who are trying to find purpose, significance, and happiness the same way Solomon is trying to find it. We haven't learned from him. And we're trying to find it like he did, and he ended up hating life. And if it's depressing to us, maybe it's because we're trying the same thing. We haven't learned anything from him. You know, we can learn from others who have tried it, or we can do it ourselves. Isn't it a whole lot better to learn from others and avoid making the same naive mistakes? We need to be like Solomon at the first. And you remember the story of Solomon when he became king. He said these words, and I'm looking back in 1 Kings chapter 3 and verse number 7. When he said to God, "But I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in." Here he is, king. There's some discussion about what he meant by little child. Some suggest he's probably about 20. And he's that age. Perhaps some have determined the age of David and some of the events of his life. It's not stated specifically, so I'm not dogmatic about that. But he perhaps was around 20 years old. I don't think he was 10, 11 years old. Even though there were other kings that were young. But perhaps he's recognizing in a humble kind of way, I'm still a child in understanding. I need help. And that's when he prayed to God for an understanding heart in verse 9 to judge your people that I may discern between good and evil. You see, there's an ability that comes, and he got it sooner than later because he prayed for it. And there may be a lesson in that because James 1 tells us to pray for wisdom. Perhaps we can get it sooner than just taking the time that experience will be given to us over time. But he was given an understanding heart. It takes humility. He was willing to say, "Lord, you show me. I don't know. I don't have any idea. I don't know how to go." And if we don't bring a humble heart to any discussion of helping each other, have you had those moments where someone, and I've done it to others. I'm thinking of an occasion right now, and I won't share it with you right now, but there was a time where I was struggling with something. I went to someone to ask for advice, and I think sometimes I was just hoping he agreed with what I already had decided I was going to do. And he didn't. He told me what I did wanted, what I needed to hear. It's not what I wanted to hear, and he was right. But we need to be willing to listen to God himself and let his word pour into our hearts and listen to the wisdom that he has given us. We do learn from experience. There's no question that there's some things learned over time in which we use the time that God has given us to learn and to make the changes we ought to make in our lives. I'm turning to Hebrews chapter 5 and looking at verse number 14. He says, "Solid food belongs to those who are of full age," the New King James says, "or mature. That is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil." Sounds like what Solomon asked for and what he was given. There are some things in Scripture that seem to me to be pretty clear-cut, that God said this, and it's what I'm going to do. But isn't there some things that take some discernment? Are there some things that involve some judgment? I don't want to use the word opinion here, because sometimes we use that in contrast to matters of faith, matters of opinion. Quite frankly, I think there are some matters of judgment that are matters of salvation, matters of us being right with God. That may not be just completely spelled out in "thou shalt" or "thou shalt not." Then we may have to think and apply and test and consider what others have done with the principles of God. Proverbs, as you know, are general truisms. And a lot of wisdom is that way. There can be exceptions. But I'm afraid some of us think that we're always going to be the exception. There are times of admonition and warning. We can see where things are headed because we've seen them go that way many times before in the countless lives of others. I do not hesitate. If I see someone spending time with somebody else besides their spouse, alone in a restaurant, to say, "What are you doing?" "Oh, it's okay." Or young people that come, or other people come to me and say, "You know, I'm just going to have a drink or two and go down and sit at the bar with my friends." And you hear things like that and you say, "Can we talk about that? Can let's look at some principles." The goal is for us to not be naive, but to be innocent, to be wise and not foolish. Another proverb, "Listen to the counsel and receive instruction that you may be wise in your latter days." Listen now, younger, so in latter days, the wisdom that you will be filled with will guide you into making great decisions. How many of us have said this? "How I hated instruction and my heart despised reproof." And that's in a context in Proverbs 5, verse 12, where Solomon is warning his son about the immoral woman. And he gets way too close, and then he gets involved, and then he has an affair. And the next thing you know, he's being taken to court, and he's losing everything he has, and he's paying this and that, and that's a mess. And maybe even has gotten some disease as his body is struggling with what he's done. That may be that part of that context in Proverbs 5. And that's when he makes this statement. And what he didn't do was recognize, and this is where it happens to us, is, "Well, just draw me the line, Lee. Show me where the line is." And I'm going to tell you tonight, there's some things I can't show you where the line is. Because I don't believe everything necessarily black and white. Because I think there's some gray areas, and I have decided that there are some gray areas I'm going to avoid. I'm going to stay in the white before I get to the black. And yet sometimes we're just going to see how close we can get. Sometimes wisdom and listening to wisdom is listening to some admonitions that I'm actually being told to be careful about something that maybe in some sense it's okay. I haven't crossed the line yet. But experience says most people will. Are we willing to hear that? Are we willing to hear that? You know, let's spend a moment or two talking about closing the generation gap if we can. I don't think there has to be a generation gap. Oh, I understand there's some practical things about younger and older folks. That's just the way life is. Different music. You like different music, different movies, different television shows. Technology challenged. I don't know half the stuff my phone does, and you probably do, and you probably get through doing things a whole lot simpler than I do. Clothes and hairstyles. Oh, I wish I could find a picture of me in the fifth grade, rocking my green and white pinstripe bell bottoms. You know, I know there are differences. But we have a commonality, and that's our faith in Jesus. Let's exploit that and not our differences. We can teach parents. I'm going to look at both sides of this. Teach our children to respect those who are older. In fact, I think we ought to. I value relationship with young people, and sometimes I know why some I'm connecting with better than others. And I say this kindly, but I think in a lot of cases it's because that's what their parents have expected of them. I was in one church and I was hearing this from both sides, you know, that, oh, I wish the older people would pay attention to the younger people. And then I'd hear the other side, I wish the young people would pay attention to the older people. And so trying to work and build, you know, do lessons like this to try to get us to pay attention to one another. But it does work both ways. I'll just tell you my own experience growing up in Williams, Indiana. I was it. I was the only teenager except until my sister became a freshman in high school and I was a senior. I didn't know she existed, so that didn't help much. I was that kind of guy, you know, that if I saw her coming down the hallway of school, you know, I don't know who she is. You know, that, my little freshman sister, that's not very nice. That was the jerk I was. I think it was all, anyway, but, you know, I grew up in a church where just mostly older people. And I'm not saying having some peers would not have been helpful. It would have been. Because my peers were worldly people when I was in school. And my peer, the only young man in the congregation, probably 4 or 5 years older than me, very worldly. And I spent time with him, and that didn't help me either. But I also know that it put me in a position of being attached to. And my mom and dad expected. We went to their house. They invited the people in our house, our elders. We spent time with them. That they expected me to treat them with respect. They expected me to go up and talk to them. They expected me to say, how are you doing? Justin Thomas, one of the best golfers in the game today, a few years ago when he was 22 years old, went to Jack Nicklaus and asked him for advice. And Jack Nicklaus was 76. Now, any of you know golf know that, duh, you might want to go ask the best in the game, and Tiger's in that conversation, but anyway, and Jack Nicklaus said this: how many 22-year-olds ask anybody for advice? I'm afraid Jack recognizes the world in which we live, and that's a general statement, not to be hard on anybody, particularly sitting here tonight, but a general idea. But I also will tell you that Thomas, in talking about that encounter with Mr. Nicklaus, spoke how comfortable he felt around him. And he felt comfortable because he knew that Nicklaus was not trying to intimidate him by any means. He wasn't acting like, hey, I'm the best that's ever in this game, you know, and you ought to listen to me. No, he listened to Justin just as much as Justin listened to him. And it became a conversation. And it wasn't one way. But Justin went there to listen to him. And because, and it says it spoke to his character, is what Thomas said about him. Older folks can show an interest, and this is the other side of the coin, in younger folks without offering advice so that they know we have no agenda. So I'm connecting, trying with these young folks, and we're spending time together. I want them to know I'm interested in them, want to know what's going on in their life. You know, tell me the music you're listening to. By the way, can I segue for a moment? This younger generation knows what good music is because they like the music I listen to. Went to downtown Nashville 5 or 6 years ago during CMA Fest, and they had some free concerts, and Clint Black was one of them. Betsy and I went down to hear him, and they had, you know, different performers every 45 minutes, every 30, 45 minutes. And during the pause, they'd play other music. And during the pause and the break of, between two performers, they played Don't Stop Believing by Journey. And I looked around and every young person around me was singing it word for word. And I said, there's hope for this generation. Now listen, before I go too much further, there was a lot of junk in that music too. There's a lot of ungodliness back then too. And I listened to too much of that. So there are some connections we make and can have some fun with that. The law taught respect for elders. I'm going back to that side. You shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man. Your fear, your God, I am the Lord, Leviticus 19:32. But I also understand this, and I don't, Not every older person is a person of wisdom. I think I mentioned in our meeting at John Head's once a month, one of the guys here read this passage. He said, the silver-haired head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. You know, we don't become wise just because we get old. We become wise because we use our senses, we exercise our senses, we read, we study, we meditate, we think, we observe, we use our eyes, we look, we listen. I'm not sure how about taste and smell comes into that, but we pay attention. And we observe how things go. And when people make certain decisions, and we've seen it time and time again, where it leads. When Jerusalem was destroyed, the elders were no longer sitting at the gates, and the people had no respect for them. And in that case, they didn't deserve any. Lamentations 4:16. And I want to say some things about some younger folks. I know some younger men and women, young men and young women, boys, young girls, who have wisdom beyond their years. And oftentimes it's because they've become students of the Word. They've listened to Jesus. They've listened to the apostles. And not only that, they've listened to those who are older. And they've decided to do that very early in their life. I mentioned to you a few weeks ago, you know, I was a 25-year-old keeping Bill Hall up until the wee hours of the night, asking him questions because I wanted to listen to this older preacher who was 43 at the time. And I still do that when we stop and see Bill on our way down south. I'm going to tell you something just extremely humbling to me. We stop sometimes and he asks me what I think. I still feel like the 25-year-old kid. But now he's asking the 63-year-old man, what do you think about this, Lee? And that's humbling. I'll tell you, it's encouraging. This younger and older thing, you know, I've got 20-year-olds, 18-year-olds, 40-year-olds, you know, there's old people like J.D. 37, you know, that you'll turn to, and he's an older guy, an older preacher to some. He'll be helpful to you. And I don't mind watching younger people go to folks like him and others that are here that ask for advice. We need to listen to each other. I mentioned this in studying about traditions. You know, a younger person can read the Bible themselves, and they can say, why aren't we doing this? Or how come we don't do this? And we need to be able to answer them. And sometimes the answer may be, well, we probably ought to start doing that. Because they can see too. And sometimes, quite frankly, they may see without some of the blinders that I've developed and over my years, because that can happen. Well, let's think about it a little bit. I'm going to take about two different areas, and you know what these are. Whose advice am I listening to when it comes to marriage and raising kids and working and worshiping with the local church? Let's think. And again, this is a general observation. This is not a lesson. I don't have time. But to get us thinking about these areas, and I'm trying to encourage people to listen, and I am encouraging younger folks that there is solid, sound counsel and advice beginning with God. It was a couple years ago, a young father getting ready to be a young father. One of his peers told him, don't listen to anybody else's advice. And that children don't come with instruction booklets. And I love this young man. And my heart just sank. That's not true. How many of us, when we became husband and wife, didn't want to hear the advice of others? Em and Grant. And Betsy and I had 5 lessons to go through. And because of sickness and busy and whatever, we didn't get to the last 2, but I told them, I'm not done with you. So when you get back here, we're going to do those last 2 as well. 1st of all, there's the wisdom of God. Children come without instruction booklets. God allowed us to have children and said nothing. I think we've overlooked the volume. And it may not be able to be specific, and it may be a thing here and a thing there. And even in Genesis, and you can learn things about marriage, even in the mess that Leah and Rachel and Jacob were involved in. And you can learn some things from Abraham and Sarah and Mary and Joseph, and it may just be little things here and there. And you put all that together. Obviously, there are passages like Ephesians 5 that I read yesterday to Emma and Grant, although they probably weren't paying a lick of attention. That's not very nice, is it? My wedding ceremony notes are pretty short because I've decided I'm not sure anybody remembers any of it. Maybe they do. Maybe I'm being too cynical. But it's there. God's spoken about it. And there are examples, many other examples throughout Scripture. And then we've got what we've already mentioned. We've got Proverbs. We've got Solomon writing to his son. This is sound parenting advice for today. And for children to listen, there's wisdom concerning money and sex and self-control and anger and the influence of friends and wine and drugs. It's all there. Because it's what's always been needed. 1,000 years before Christ and before that. We just need to listen. We need to dig in. We need to think about it. Talk about it with each other. Share those things with each other. I'm 63 years old. There are moments I wish I could still talk to my dad. When we drive 30 through town, headed towards Williams or something on the west side of Bedford, there's a Long John Silver's, and I still think about it. I'm 25 years old, newly married, 2 or 3 years, living in Mount Sterling, Kentucky, and we get our first credit card. First mistake. Went and bought a used car that I paid too much for. We're 3 hours from Gatlinburg. I can jump in a car and be in Gatlinburg in 3 hours from Mount Sterling, and I got a credit card to pay for the motels, which, by the way, back then were $19.99, and they were clean. I'm that old. But there was food and gas and entertainment and all of that, you know. So we would do that, and so pretty soon I can't pay the balance on the credit card anymore. And then I got this car payment. And pretty soon, I'm struggling. And I can't get a loan because the banks don't give me a loan. And so I go to Bedford. We drive up to Bedford. And I bring the papers to my dad and say, Dad, would you co-sign for this for me? And my dad looked across the table, and sometimes wisdom is just little short statements. And I can still hear the words. I can still see his face if I close my eyes. Son, if you can't afford it, don't buy it. Isn't that profound? Just stuff like that. And sometimes the advice we need to give each other is just those little things. And Solomon talks about it. Solomon's way ahead of Dave Ramsey, okay? In fact, if Dave Ramsey's making any sense, he's talking about Solomon. Proverbs, and I've heard him do that. In fact, I think one of his letterheads or something somewhere has this idea of the borrower being slave to the lender. And that's what happens. So you see, all of that's there. There are good examples of our parents. But I'm going to stop here and say, I understand. I know there are folks sitting in this audience who didn't have parents who were Christians. Now, some of us had parents who weren't Christians. Still good people. Still loved each other. Good parents in a lot of ways, cared about you, but just weren't Christians. But maybe there's some that weren't. But some of us had wonderful examples. Please listen to them. Pay attention. And then there's the passage that talks about older women teaching younger women. I'm going to turn to that passage. I'm looking in Titus chapter 2, and I recognize that God is telling older women to have a role here. And by the way, this could be, and I'm going to insult some 40-year-olds, but this could be some 40-year-olds talking to some 20-year-olds. Older, didn't say old, older. Older women. Likewise, they be reverent in behavior, not slanders, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish their young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. I think we misuse this passage. This is not talking about a woman teaching a Bible class. Not talking about teaching a ladies' Bible class on Habakkuk or Revelation. A woman may be able to do that as well as anybody. But the context says she teaches these things. And that requires some younger women who are willing to be taught. Willing to be listened. And that can be one-on-one. And it can be 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour over cooking supper. I mean, it's just a lot of ways you can do that. And we can help each other. But be those who are willing to ask. Be willing those who are willing to go to them and ask. Wisdom of counselors. I was raised in my early preaching days with people like Willard Harley and Emerson Eggerichs. And I want to mention two gospel preachers, Irvin Lee and L.A. Stopher, who have written about the family. James Dobson. I've got something here I want to make you smile for a moment. We lived here, maybe I mentioned this to you before, 35 years ago when Roger Schaus was in Greenwood. He recommended a book to me one day. And the title of the book is, by Dobson, What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women. Betsy has never admitted asking him to tell me, to give me that book. But she should have. I think there is that wisdom there. We're willing to hear it, willing to listen. But more than that, please explain to me why elders are to have wives who are faithful and are to have faithful children, and why they are to have guided or ruled their houses well. All of those qualifications are given because those are the qualifications they will need to do the work. And Isaiah wrote about the shepherds of his day and what he would be to his people. He will feed his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs with his arm, that would be the young. He'll carry them in his bosom, and he will gently lead those who are with young. So, isn't that a wonderful picture? He helps the young, and not only that, but he sees the young parents, and he helps them. Elders ought not be a neglected resource. We are to esteem them very highly, 2 Thessalonians 5:13. Use them. I will tell you that we have. Thankfully, with our children in our lives, we've had elders wherever we've been. We had teenagers when we lived in Marion. And I had one particular elder, some of you know Bruce and Kathy Everett. Bruce and Kathy were our go-to couple. Wonderful. You need that. You know, sometimes it helped me. They'd gone through the same kind of things I was going through. I love the story Bruce told. He was reading the newspaper one day, and Brian had turned 18. And they've got two boys, Brian and Mark. I'll say it was Brian. It was Brian. Brian announced, he came in, just walked in the room and announced to his dad, "Dad, I'm 18. That means I don't have a curfew anymore." And his dad never lifted his head up above the newspaper and said, "Excuse me, are you moving out today?" let's make sure you understand something here. And they have two fine boys, as far as I know. And I've asked others, and sometimes I got simple answers. I've looked back, and I'm not saying that all the wisdom I've ever heard, it was, you know, all of us would probably look back and say, well, I'm not, that was very good advice, but a lot of it was just wonderful advice. Here's a hard thing. Sometimes we can tell some younger parents and younger couples, here's the mistakes we made. Here's mistakes we made. And I don't want you to make the same ones. And that takes some courage. But we can be helpful even with that advice when we're trying to help others. Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do tonight. I got another page of notes and I'm going to quit. Because I think I can do this in another lesson. I'll tell you what I'm going to put it up there and it's going to whet your appetite. Are we listening to older when it talks about local church membership? What are we looking for in a local church? When you moved to worship with this group in the last 20 years, what were you looking for? You know, this is an attractive group of people. We got elders, Bible classes, preachers. Was it important to you when you came here that the church was doing things according to the authority of Jesus? A lot of young people, easy to come here, kids, and all of that can be good. Were you here because there's a respect for the authority of Jesus in this church? And this is the point I'm going to develop later. We need to appreciate the older generation of soldiers who fought some very tough battles so that when you moved here in the last 20 years, you could walk in and be a part of a group where we're not just in constant turmoil over about what we're going to do in our assemblies. You could have some confidence about what we're going to do with the contribution when you put money in that basket. You could have confidence when we come in here and the preaching you're going to hear about salvation. What we're going to do in our worship, you're not coming in here expecting, you know, some band up here one Sunday or even one instrument. You're not worried about that because you've got some confidence that some people have laid the groundwork and said, you know, those are things we don't have authority for. We're losing that generation. And I may not agree with everything everybody said in the past about establishing authority. If I mention Billy Moore and Roy Cogdell, there probably isn't five people in this church that knows who I'm talking about, maybe 10. And I wouldn't use their books when I sit down with somebody. John's written some material, he says, and taught on the subject. I like Doy Moyer's material. Mind Your King. They give a fresh look at this business of authority. But we need to stay at it. We need to keep thinking about it, keep studying it and appreciating. Not that I'm doing what I do because what they say that's what I ought to do, but because I go back and say, how did they come to the conclusions they did? And did they use the scriptures? And can I see their arguments? And they worked around and came to these conclusions, discerned. And I look at that and say, you know, I think that's right. And so I think we need to appreciate an older generation. We did spend the night with Byron Moyen-Ash, and I mentioned that because so many of you know them. And I'm going to talk about institutionalism later because, again, I'm cognizant of the fact that I'm using that term, and there are folks in this audience that don't have a clue, and that's okay when we talk about institutionalism. But they were an institutional group. That's how they grew up. He went to Freed Hardeman. You know, eventually his family left those churches of Christ, no longer met with them, that were doing things like supporting colleges and orphans' homes, and sponsoring church arrangement. And I asked Byron just this last couple of days, I said, what was the impetus for you leaving? And he said, just a lack of respect for authority. He said that was the basic problem. And his dad talked about just beginning to see a lack of respect for authority. And what we see today is that those folks have that lack of respect of authority and continue to have that lack of respect. We see where they are now. I lived in Nashville, Tennessee for 11 years, and I could probably see from here to here in 95 churches of Christ in the Nashville area. I said I wasn't going to preach about this part. About the time that we've got some who've decided that everything we do is a tradition of churches of Christ, there are, and I won't say many, but I'm hearing more and more of folks who are leaving other churches of Christ or Christian churches or denominations looking for a group of people who respect the Bible and respect the authority of Jesus. Now, we may not yet agree on all the application and all the ins and outs of that, but they're looking for that. They desire that. Roger Souse was telling me that where they are at Charlestown Road, they've had several people leave one of the local churches of Christ because they're just not hearing the Bible taught. They've had a preacher in the Christian church that's now meeting with them because he said, they've left me. They don't have any respect for the Bible. And so there's those people out there, and we need to, what I'm going to say, stay the course. Be open, listen, study, think about, be meek and gentle. But let's make sure we have that respect, and we'll develop some more lessons along that line. Folks, we need wisdom. Keep growing. Keep helping. Who are we listening to? I'm looking at this audience, and some of you have got parents and grandparents you can listen to. You'll never have to come and ask me anything. If JD never comes and asks me anything, and I think about it, I'm not going to be offended by that too much. But anyway, I'm kidding, JD. Because I know his parents. I know his grandparents were. I know the people he surrounds himself with. I know who his mentors have been. You know, he didn't need me. And I know who mine are. So when I have confidence in people who they're listening to, I know the direction they're headed. Have the humility to listen. Oh, we're so proud when we're teenagers. Some of us do better than others, and some of you have done way better than I did. You know, we go through these stages where our parents are just the dumbest people that ever walked the face of the earth. We know everything when we're 16. And then we're 25 and we're looking back and thinking how smart our dad was. We want to grow up a little bit. So I'm just trying to help us grow up a little faster tonight than normal. And do I have the character to give advice? That's it. You know, if you come to me or sometime I feel the need that I need to come to you and say, I'm concerned about something. I hope I have the character. You'll see the love, the meekness, the gentleness, that I just want to help. I'm warning you. Your house is on fire, and if you don't get out, you're going to burn up with it. I just want to save you. And if you see that in me, then you've come to me and warned me too. Thank you for listening to this. I appreciate it so very much. The invitation is extended to anyone in our audience that's not a Christian, or to anybody else that needs help from the Lord and that can use us to help you. We'd be glad to do that. Let us know what we can do as we stand and as we sing.